next.
It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins are with us in the studio. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben. Good morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Well, we're talking about how the ducks are doing today.
Yeah, that's right. The ducks are on the pond today.
Yes, they are.
I think he's turned into Lowe's on Morehead City. Might run over some mullet.
I mean,
that water collects there pretty quickly.
A few puddles out there.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, Ben. We are going to talk about fiduciary liability. And, of course, that's an awfully big word to have this early in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
A fiduciary is a person who has the responsibility of holding funds for another.
Mm-hmm.
They are not their personal assets.
Mm-hmm.
They are the assets of someone else, but they are under a duty or responsibility to garner and handle these assets, if you will, for the benefit of another.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a fiduciary is a fairly broad term for many different types of fiduciaries.
Mm-hmm.
We hear about the word attorney in fact under a power of attorney. We hear about an executor under a will or an administrator if there is no will. We talk about the trustee of a trust. We talk about the guardian of certain monies,
right,
for a minor or for a person who has diminished capacity. All of these are categories, if you will, of fiduciaries, folks who are wearing the hat of being responsible for the assets of another. Now, unfortunately, one of the most active areas of the law, a very, very active area, Ben, is fiduciary liability. Wes and I are constantly receiving, you know, periodicals, if you will, articles,
sure,
magazines in our industry, the legal industry, if you will. And of course, there's a lot of articles about the scope of these kinds of liabilities and how very real they are this day and time. Some of our trust companies, who
mm-hmm.
historically have been banks, if you will, have greatly limited their fiduciary cases. They just simply do not take them on. Absolutely.
Hmm.
Several of the trust departments with some of the more prominent North Carolina banks, you know, no longer exist,
mm-hmm.
or they have agents that handle these matters,
right,
for them.
Yeah.
Companies within the company. But things have definitely changed with regard to folks that are willing to take on
mm-hmm.
this fiduciary obligation.
Right.
Now, with all that background, one more thing to say is that when you're acting as a fiduciary, you're not allowed to just do with the resources what you would do with your own resources.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ben, if you've got, you know, a little money burning your bank account and you want to go out and buy a new boat or
mm-hmm.
buy some equipment for the yard for the summer, well, heck, no one to answer to but Ben.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. This is not the case when you are a fiduciary. You must act with a heightened sense of obligation as to what is really within the best interest
mm-hmm.
of the folks who you're holding this money for. What would a reasonable person, if you will, a committee of reasonable people determine to be the appropriate action to take?
I imagine most of your occasions we're talking mm-hmm. about here has to do with estate planning, but fiduciaries exist in a lot of different ways. I mean, a trustee of a church has a fiduciary responsibility.
Yes.
You're on a board of a directors, even of a charity, you have a fiduciary responsibility.
That's right. If you're holding assets for someone else or for a different entity and, you know, you have that obligation
mm-hmm.
to manage those assets and have basically the checkbook in your hand,
mm-hmm.
then you're under, in most cases, that special fiduciary relationship, and therefore you need to always take into consideration that although folks aren't checking behind you
right.
every week, every right. day, at any point in time, there could be, you know, an investigation about mm-hmm. how these funds have been used, so on and so forth. And that's when these breach of fiduciary duty cases arise.
Yeah. Again, often they're crimes of opportunity. There's money in the till.
Yeah. That's right. So, you know, on the civil side of things, here mm-hmm. we are talking about breach of fiduciary duty.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when we file these breach of fiduciary duty cases, we also have a fraud element in the case,
mm-hmm.
might have a constructive fraud element in the case. So maybe an unjust enrichment claim. So there's a lot of tools in the toolbox that we use as attorneys when we're filing, you know, mm-hmm. an action for breach of fiduciary duty. And at Harvell and Collins, we have, you know, at any given time, dozens of these type cases, mm-hmm. you know, many, many in the court system. Unfortunately, there's just a lot of that going on. It seems like the last couple of years has been more of a run of it, mm-hmm. that type stuff going on than there has been in the past. So that's the civil side of it, but a lot of times you have to look at the criminal side of it as well. Mm-hmm. And then we're talking about obtaining property by false pretenses. We're talking about embezzlement.
Right.
You know, you have the right to hold the money, but you're using it for your own benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That type of thing. So many times we'll have, the criminal side of the case moving, you know, through the district attorney's office or through the investigators. And we don't really have much to do with that other mm-hmm. than, let's say, if we represent the victim, then the victim may be, you know, obviously providing information, so on and so forth.
Right.
And then the civil side may be running at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, every case is different and every situation is different. But, you know, there are multiple claims, in our statutes that deal with these issues. Another thing that's interesting in the world of litigation when we're dealing with these breach of fiduciary duty cases is that the law in North Carolina is that it affords for a shifting of the burden.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now that is a complex issue here at 7:39 on a rainy Tuesday morning. But, typically when you're a plaintiff in a lawsuit, let's say if you're in a car accident
mm-hmm.
and you're bringing the action against the defendant for negligence, then it's your burden as the plaintiff to prove that, of course, the defendant was negligent.
Mm-hmm.
You need to do that, then prove your damages, so on and so forth. But in the event that you can establish that there was, in fact, a fiduciary duty, mm-hmm. which in many cases is pretty simple,
mm-hmm.
you were the attorney, in fact, under the power of attorney.
Right.
You were the named trustee. Mm-hmm. You were the administrator. You were the executor. If you make those proper allegations in the complaint, then the burden then shifts to that fiduciary,
right.
to that defendant, to then prove that they did not breach the fiduciary duty.
Exactly.
So it's a burden shifting that's a very, very powerful thing in the law in North Carolina because it, you know, completely takes the burden off of the shoulders in the plaintiff, where that burden would normally lie on the shoulders of the plaintiff in a civil action.
Yes, and that's the difference between the civil and criminal side of that as well, right? I mean, so you're dealing with the civil side of that, where
right.
the burden is going to be on that defendant.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, you know, we deal with these kind of cases in all different contexts, and we deal with it on the side of, you know, we're representing the person who was the victim who was taken
right.
advantage of. Or we're representing maybe the beneficiaries of the estate who have mm-hmm. learned that the executor helped themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have several of those cases going on. But we also represent fiduciaries in every day, all day long,
mm-hmm.
to make sure that they don't get in trouble.
Right.
That they
right.
do it the right way.
In many ways, it's similar to keeping a corporation on the right track, isn't it? I mean,
that's right.
The right records. And
yeah. It really comes down to accountability.
Mm-hmm.
And Cecil can talk a little bit about some of the advice that we give folks who are acting as a fiduciary. I wasn't here last week, but I was listening. One of the things he mentioned,
mm-hmm.
I think we had a caller, was about no checks to cash because
right.
there's no record.
Right.
I didn't get the whole conversation, right. but that's one of the many things that we recommend.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. When you're operating under a power of attorney,
mm-hmm.
It really is important that you have a a record keeping system.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be very simple. But checks to yourself that are then cashed,
mm-hmm.
or checks to cash that are cash. There really is no underlying documentation as to what this money is being used for that will support the principal for
mm-hmm.
the benefit of the one that you're holding the money for.
Right.
What is the cash for?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's important that there then be a notation, made,
mm-hmm.
possibly even on the check.
Yeah, the memo line.
A memo line.
Right.
Or a record-keeping system that says that, each and every Friday there is a check cashed for $300 that is to pay for the following item.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ben, the other thing that evolves in all of these, whether it's under a power of attorney, as an executor, as an administrator, as a trustee, I mean, in all fairness, Ben, there is gray zone.
Mm-hmm.
This is the real world here,
yeah.
And everything is not always black and white. And in this area, it's the same way. Is it time to sell the house? Will the market improve? Is there a mortgage on the house that's weighting down the cash flow, if you will, for the principal? We have a case in our office right now where that's going on. A person really feels that they should sell the home
mm-hmm.
because there is a quite hefty mortgage on it, and the income is just not there every month to support it. Now that the person in the family has had to go into a nursing home.
All right. We'll have more advice, too, for financial fiduciaries, for those who are in that position. We'll talk about that coming up in a moment, sort of follow the money. And we'll also entertain your questions, too, 800-818-2255, or these local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
Hey, welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. The right advice at the right time online at harvellandcollins.com, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us in studio. So where do we go now?
Well, Wes wants to talk about, let's don't wait too long. Let's talk here a moment about the statute of limitations and not waiting, waiting and sitting on one's laurels.
Right.
It's an important concept.
Well, that's pretty important in the world of my practice,
mm-hmm.
With regard to everything that I deal with. I mean, a lot of times the first question I ask folks, no matter what the case is, whether it's a construction case or
mm-hmm.
a breach of contract case or a negligence case or a fiduciary case or a fraud case, when did you first learn about this?
It's the old Watergate question. It's what did you know and when did you know it?
That's right. We ask that because the statute of limitations drives a lot of
mm-hmm.
Litigation, obviously. If you wait too long, then you're not going to have a claim because it's going to die on the vine, and I'm not one to bring an action outside of the statute of limitations.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is it a waste of time and effort for the client, the attorney really shouldn't do that. Even if you think it's a close case, then maybe. I mean, it's going to be circumstantial,
mm-hmm.
but nevertheless, you have to be very careful about that. So when we talk about breach of fiduciary duty cases, the two statute of limitations that would come into play would be a 3-year and a 4-year
mm-hmm.
because a lot of the claims would spin off potentially into a fraud type claim. That would be if there was fraudulent information that was false with intent to deceive provided. Like let's say that you have an executor who's misusing funds in an estate, but they're filing something with the court that is showing something other than what they really did
to
trick everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a constructive fraud case and would be, a 4-year statute. So
4 years of what?
It would be 4 years
to bring a case.
4 years from the date that you knew or should have known.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a strong argument that if you filed, your accounting with the court,
mm-hmm.
that you're on public notice.
Right.
Because that's public record.
Right.
So that 4 years really arguably starts right from when that document's being filed.
Mm-hmm.
So be that as it may, 4 years in a lot of these type fraud cases, but the majority of the claims under breach of fiduciary duty is going to be a 3-year period mm-hmm. of time from the date that you knew or should have known of the actual breach of fiduciary duty. So, you know, don't wait too long if there are issues going on and or you think that there are issues going on. People oftentimes say, Mr. Collins, well, I think that there's something going on here because this doesn't sound right. This doesn't look right, but I don't really know.
Right.
So what do I do? Mm-hmm. Well, it's a pretty simple answer to that. We request the documents. Mm-hmm. We request the bank records. The bank records are not going to lie to us.
Right.
I mean, they're kept by the bank. We request the evidence. And in the event that evidence is not forthcoming, then there's a red flag there. Mm-hmm. And it could be that we are forced into filing a civil action to then use the rules of evidence and the rules of civil procedure through the discovery process with interrogatories and requests for production of documents and subpoenaing records in order to get the evidence. But we've already filed the lawsuit, so we're within the statute of limitations then. Also, the statutes in many cases guarantee the right to the evidence. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, if you're the beneficiary of a trust, then the trustee has to give you the records with regard to the trust assets and a copy of the trust itself. So that's
Let's take an example there. Say you have a child who's a beneficiary of a trust, and they're not going to inherit the money for some period of time.
Right.
So the trustee could provide this. You know, it might be a minor child or maybe it's 18 years old by now, but they're not going to release it until they're 30. So.
Right. Well, the statute's not going to run until they turn 18. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to run against someone who's a minor.
Right.
And we have a case just like that now, you know, in our office where the father died, the mother took over the estate, two young children, and then it appears that there was some pretty egregious breach of fiduciary duty, but these children are now, you know, around 20, put it that way.
Well, so they have a right
that statute would have started to run, you know, at 18. Mm-hmm. So if they waited until, you know, after they're 21, 22, more than 3 years, then maybe some of these claims would go away because they knew or maybe should have known of the issues with regard to the breach of fiduciary duty at the time they turn 18, depending on the circumstances.
Well, is that know or should have known? Is that should have? It's the hard one to argue, right?
That's right. And if you do have evidence suggesting that there's a factual determination here, meaning someone needs to make a determination as to when these people, the plaintiffs, should have known, then that's always a jury question. That means you don't get kicked out on a motion to dismiss or a summary judgment. But in some cases, it's really not a question about when you knew or should have known because, like the example I just mentioned a second ago, it was clear on the documents that were filed in the court. Therefore, you knew at this point in time.
Right.
And that's record notice.
All right. More to come in a moment with Harvell and Collins. And Let's Talk Legal. You can reach us at 800-818-2255 or our local numbers. You know, you're dealing with, as we hear back on Let's Talk Legal, we're talking about fiduciary responsibilities. Of course, you're always following the money, but there's a lot of emotion. There's a lot of, family, you know, it's often involved or, you know, very personal things that are happening.
There's just no question about that. These are very difficult cases for families. You know, this is highly charged. These guardianship cases that are contested between, you know, who's going to have the authority over mom, you know, and you've got brother and sister, you know, potentially you've got who's got the power of attorney and you've got, you know, someone in the family thinking that the fiduciary is breaching their obligation to their mom. They're very difficult cases. They're very difficult cases for families. No question about it. It's important that they have good representation, that they have strong representation But we go into these cases knowing that it's almost like divorce cases, if you will, but
right.
they require a lot of hand-holding mm-hmm. for these clients because they feel in a very vulnerable and highly charged situation.
Yeah. But there's also some facts to lay out. I mean, you become basically a forensic accountant, don't you, with this?
Yeah, like I was mentioning, you know, a lot of times we get into these cases based on, you know, just kind of seeing the tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
We're not really sure how far this goes. And, you know, a lot of times we're just forced to filing the lawsuit because we don't have the tools at our disposal to be able to get all the information until we do file the lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we file the lawsuit and we get the party served and the lawsuit progresses, we're then able to get documents, like I mentioned before, through subpoena.
Mm-hmm.
We're able to use interrogatories, which are written questions
right.
you know, to the party, requests for production of documents, requests for admissions. We're able to depose people, ask them questions under oath to get down to the bottom of it. So those.
In one part, though, you mentioned about you can get to trial, you can actually get to before a jury in some of these cases, right?
Most of them, we request a jury, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be a jury trial in most cases, but that would be at the choice of the party. So,
mm-hmm.
yes, this is normally a civil superior court.
Mm-hmm.
Highest level of trial court in the state courts of North Carolina. So there's that option, you know, for a jury if you want to have a jury.
Yeah.
You know? But a lot of, like you're saying, you know, you don't really know the full extent of what's going on
mm-hmm.
in many cases until you've actually filed the lawsuit and, you know, gone through the discovery process and then maybe taken depositions. And then we can get, you know, a clear mm-hmm. picture then of how the assets have been used. But we don't like to jump right into that, obviously.
Yeah.
We would like to give the person we believe has breached the fiduciary duty the opportunity to respond to our inquiries and our questions and provide their mm-hmm. explanation before going into, you know, court with something like this.
Yeah, because as you said, you mentioned Cecil about the gray areas here, you know, and some of those maybe those questions can be cleared up.
Well, there's no question about that, Ben. I mean, well, let's continue this subject next week, and I'm not trying to cut us off right now, but what I'm saying is that, you know, there are decisions that have to be made, and there's sometimes these decisions are not crystal clear.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the person as the fiduciary is wearing the hat of responsibility. And with that comes the responsibility of making the best decision that you can under all of the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And these are not sometimes easy decisions to make. You know, again, is it time to sell the property? Will
right.
we get a better price a year from now?
Right.
Is it time to liquidate the portfolio? You know, should mom stay in the home or should mom be in a nursing home, which is going to provide the better care for her?
And you can find out more next week. We'll talk about it. But you can also find out more from Harvell and Collins at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City. Call them for an appointment at 726-9050. That's 726-9050. HarvellandCollins.com.